Attention all passengers. The Uber ride for Jeff's rugby team will depart in 5 minutes from platform 15. Your ride comes with 6 toilets and a refreshments carriage that you'll empty within 5 minutes. Thank you for booking your tickets on Uber.
Trains on Uber.
Can I ask you a question? Have you ever reached for something sweet, not because you were hungry, but because you were perhaps overwhelmed or lonely or stressed or exhausted? I don't think we're always craving sugar. I think sometimes we are simply craving comfort. And what if breaking free from sugar isn't really about food at all? What if it's finally believing that you're enough? Welcome back to the show, everyone. Today, we're talking about something that affects millions of women every single day, sugar. But this isn't really a conversation about sugar. It's about what sugar represents, the comfort, the relief, the control, the reward, the escape. Because so often the battle isn't happening in the kitchen, it's happening in our minds and in our hearts. So Christine Trimp is back, and she's the author of Sugar Freed. And what I love about Christine's message is that she doesn't simply teach women how to stop eating sugar. She goes to the root of the issue. Christine is holding a workshop called The Root of Your Hunger, which will be hosted on Saturday, July 11th, 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. Eastern. And she may help you in that call discover why you keep reaching for that sugar in the first place. So Christine, it's so good to have you back. I was thinking about you the other day. I was on a call with a woman who is like an anti-dieter, and she was talking about similar things that you do and how sugar or sugar cravings is so much more than craving sugar itself. When someone says, I just can't stop eating sugar, what do you hear that maybe they're not hearing or maybe they're not understanding?
It took me a long time to figure this out, Lisa, on my own. And by the way, thank you for having me back too.
Yeah, no, it's so good to have you back.
Yes, if I had looked back on my, what I call old Christine, my former ways of those 30 years that I lived with obesity and eventually ended up morbidly obese, I never would have thought that sugar was my issue, or I never would have called myself a sugar addict or even a food addict at the time. But when I hear women say, I can't stop eating sugar, they also might say something like, I can't stop drinking the red wine, or I can't stop eating half a bag of potato chips. It's that comfort food. It's that stress relief. It's something that they really do mindlessly. But when they begin realizing it and saying something like that, that's when like these little sparks of what I say, these aha moments that we have. Sometimes it takes us a while to get there. But when we do, I really encourage women to like lean into that and pay attention to that. Because you're right, when they say, I just can't stop eating sugar, there is so much going on underneath the surface. It's not just a simple matter of white knuckling it and saying, that's it, I quit sugar, I'm not going to eat sugar again. And then within a week, because of the white knuckling and the willpower runs out, we haven't gotten to the root of the issue, you know, then they're just back in that same loop. And since sugar is so addictive, it's really hard to break that cycle. And so that's why we constantly hear women say, like, I just can't stop eating the sugar.
What do you think women are really hungry for?
For me, I lacked identity in like who God created me to be, because I had lived in chronic disease for so many years. I was just going through the motions of life. And so now for me, I see that it took that shift in identity for me to go on this healing journey. And it didn't happen overnight. It was part of the healing process. But I was also really hungry for joy in my life, Lisa. I look back and when I wrote my book, Sugar Freed, the original working title of that book was called Craving Joy. Because all of that time, I was filling all these, I describe it as all the holes in my soul. The things that I was uncomfortable about, the things that I was emotional about, the things that I beat myself up about, the things that I had poor body image about, which we talked about last time. I was looking for something to soothe and comfort that. And now I realize, like, now that I have a healthy mindset towards food and I have a healthy emotional health, I'm able to experience joy and peace and a deeper love for people. I have better relationships. I have better emotional health. I'm much more spiritually mature. and physically healthy. So there was definitely something deep rooted, those holes in my soul that needed to be filled. And I'm so glad that we can have joy in our life to be able to do that instead of junk food. I pick joy over junk food any day now.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely the, like, there's two parts to this. There is the chemical addiction that we get to the sugar, but then there's the emotional attachment that we get to the sugar. And I mean, sugar is one thing, and I know that's your thing, sugar-free, but it's also to food in general. I was thinking about you last night because I was craving like lobster, and that's fine and all, but I had this giant meal that was way too much food for one person. I'm talking like two lobster tails, a salad, rice, vegetables. And it was like 7 p.m. when I was done. And like at 8:30, I'm like craving more food. And I'm like, I stopped and I'm like, why am I craving food? And then so I started drinking water because I've heard that, you know, maybe if you're dehydrated, you'll feel the hunger symptom. But it was so much more than that. And I was sitting there and I'm like, man, I wonder what's going on with me kind of thing. And I couldn't get to the root of it. What do you think that was about? Because I know that happens to people all the time.
Yeah. Well, it could be physiological. It could be emotional. Like if your meal was actually higher in carbohydrates than you're used to, then that's excess sugar in your body. And so that might have lit up your brain a little bit. You know, we want to keep that the sugar cravings low and quiet because we want to keep that brain activity down. We want to control all of that in our brain. But then also emotionally, if you had a stressful day, if you had some loss in your life, and sometimes even really exciting and happy experiences tie back to the memories of the days that we may have overindulged with food, like at celebrations. So there really is like that emotional aspect of it too. And yeah, the question you were asking yourself is the right question. Like, why am I feeling hungry when I just ate all of this food? And yeah, it sounds like you turned on your brain a little bit. In sugar addiction, they call that the red dog. It like starts barking. And when your body is burnt, you know, when you eat higher carbs than you're used to, so your blood sugar is going to go up a little bit. And when it starts coming back down, that might be signaling to your body that you need more food, but you know, you just ate a healthy meal. And so you could push through it. But those are the things we have to learn to identify.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to dive more into your story. And so before Sugar Freed, before you started coaching thousands of women, your relationship with sugar was a little bit different. So you told us your story on that hike you went on with your husband and you couldn't finish it because you were exhausted. And that was kind of the catalyst for your transformation. But besides that, have you ever figured out what you were searching for during those years?
I could go back to my childhood and realize that I used sugar and junk food to calm myself or to soothe myself or to just fill a space of loneliness, if that makes sense. Like if I was, I can remember being alone in my bedroom and I had snuck out the Little Debbie snacks cakes out of the pantry and went and ate them in secret because I wanted to eat them all before my brother got to them. And then, so something was going on, you know, there was some kind of sadness or loneliness in those memories that I have. I don't know exactly what. I was bullied quite a bit as a child, because I had a couple of chubby years in elementary school, and then I was chubby in middle school. So I did experience that. So I just ate my feelings with that. That's how I can look back and see like how these sugar behaviors started. And then of course, sugar is addictive. It hijacked my brain at a really early age. And so it's something that I always was consuming, over consuming, to find that comfort and to make my brain happy. Like when you are crashing, the sugar is running out, your blood sugar is crashing, the one thing that you want to do is reach for more sugar because it's a quick source of fuel and it feels like that's going to alleviate the stress. And it might for a few minutes, a few seconds, and it can really help you like calm your nervous system, but that's very short lived. So yeah, I look back and I can see that my sugar addiction behaviors definitely started in childhood.
Yeah. And I mean, as like children, like for myself, and I saw it last week at a sporting event where this young child, she was probably like 3 or 4, she was having a bit of a meltdown. And then her parents went and got her like Twizzlers and a hot dog and a pop. And this little kid's drinking this like big bottle of Coca-Cola. And I was just like so fascinated by that. And it got me thinking about being a child myself and how I was given sweets as like a treat on special occasions or, you know, after dinner when I ate all my food as like a reward system. So that completely trains our brain to think that it's a reward or something that's going to we can celebrate with. But yeah, I mean, we've all had those moments. And I mean, we have them more often than we probably like to admit, where we're having a tough day or even just a little bit of anxiety. And suddenly we're searching for food. Like I said, that happened to me yesterday. So why do emotions seem to send us straight toward food?
You know, it took me until recent years to really figure this out until I had a memory, Lisa. And it's a sad memory, but about a year ago, I started really thinking about hot fudge cream puffs. Now, I haven't eaten a hot fudge cream puff in almost 10 years. And all of a sudden, I'm thinking about hot fudge cream puffs. And I'm like, what in the world is this about? And I finally identified that I enjoyed hot fudge cream puffs with my best friend who passed away 2 years ago. And whenever she came to town, we would go and we would share one. And then also hot fudge cream puffs were a family tradition here because we lived by an ice cream shop that had those. They were a favorite. They were a family favorite. And so getting those with my family, I realized I was coming up on the 1 year anniversary of my brother's death. And so that just triggered a lot of emotions that I had to sit and think with it. Like they were bubbling up and I'm like, why in the world would I be thinking about hot fudge cream puffs? But it eventually came to me, which was a very powerful thing for me to be able to share with my coaching clients. And we had a great discussion about how food is tied to so many memories. And we might not even realize it because, again, we mindlessly put stuff in our mouth without even thinking about it. But when you are being very conscientious about your health journey, you know, we need to be able to identify those episodes in our lives and those reasons, those emotional outlets that we had for food, if you want to call it that. And that way, I knew that I had to be very determined and very resolved. I was not going to go into the local ice cream shop and get a hot fudge cream puff. Like, even though I drive by it, you know, every time I go through town, I drive right past it. And so, yeah, it's really interesting to identify things like that. And then the women in the group coaching call, we just all started sharing stories about that. And they're like, yeah, I remember the time. And when you were just talking, I remembered about a pop. We call it pop here in Michigan. You might call it soda where you're at. As a child, we would go, it was like a family ritual to go to this local pop shop, and it was called Town Club Soda. And you go in there and you get this case, this big wooden case. And my brother and I both got to fill our own case with all the flavors we'd like root beer or cherry pop or orange soda. And we did that all the time. So we always had those cases of soda pop sitting there. And that's what we drank a lot as a child. So I grew up on pop too. So yeah, that was another memory that you just sparked.
Yeah, me too. We had something called Pick a Pop. And same way. We'd have birthday parties and each child got to choose their own flavor. And so mine was cream soda, you know, the bubblegum.
Yeah.
But yeah, they were in those glass bottles and just pure sugar.
Yes.
Definitely. For sure. You know, I was addicted to substances, and I had to learn like a similar lesson that it wasn't that I was, you know, I wasn't chasing substances. I was trying to fill something much deeper. And so what I had to learn the hard way was how to sit with uncomfortable emotions. And last week on the show, I was telling you we had a guest that deals with food similar to you in certain ways. You guys are different, but similar concept that a lot of times when we get hungry, we start to feel uncomfortable. And what hunger does is it brings up emotions that we haven't dealt with. And so, you know, I hear people going on these vision quests where they, or, you know, even fasting, and that helps the body kind of process deep rooted traumas, because when the body's not processing food and digesting, then it's repairing or doing other things. And so did you feel like you had a similar pattern with sugar, that if you felt anxiety or any type of emotion that was uncomfortable, you would reach for something like sugar to help make you feel better?
Absolutely. I didn't like to be uncomfortable. And I would say nobody likes to be uncomfortable. So I often have to tell people, like, if you want to be healthy, if you want to live a healthy lifestyle, energy, vitality, you are going to have to learn how to be comfortable with being uncomfortable. And detoxing from sugar, there will be discomfort, right? There will be discomfort in the beginning stages of the process. But as soon as we get those sugar cravings quieted down, it gets so much easier. But yes, definitely. Aren't we creatures of comfort? And there's a reason why we call it comfort food, right? We're reaching for this food that we think is going to satisfy something. And it may touch the moment of, you know, that initial, like a hunger urge. That's not really like, how many times was I ever actually hungry, Lisa, when I was over 100 pounds overweight? Probably never, right? Never true hunger did I experience. But, you know, trying to satisfy that hunger, we think we're satisfying hunger, but we're actually like just doing this to satisfy that deep need that we have. You know, if we're experiencing loss or grief, trauma, we're trying, like, we don't even realize the trauma that we've been through, whether it's like big trauma or little trauma in your life. I didn't even comprehend that I had experienced trauma in my life until I began this healing journey. And so all of those years, I know I was comforting and like covering up so much stuff with food. And it's so addictive. You know, it was, I couldn't break free easily until I got serious about it, until I had a deeper understanding of what was happening, because these foods are hyper palatable. They make you keep coming back for more. And it's really hard. I describe it to my ladies in coaching, like, think of this switch in your brain and it's really rusty. Like, you know how when you're trying to move something that's really rusty, it's really hard to move, but it's not impossible. When you do the work, you know, and you get it loose, you can quiet that down. You can flip that switch. It can be flipped. Just like, I mean, you're living in recovery too. Like, you know, it can be done. It's hard work and it's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But the other side is amazing. That's where that joy and that freedom is found. And that's where we can just live and be able to breathe and have peace and, yeah, have our health back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, reality for me anyway, is that although I'm free from the patterns that I used to be in, like I have control over them, there's times when I still have really bad cravings, whether it be for, I don't know, nicotine or the urge to escape, you know, and we could do that with anything. So it's a constant battle. But as the longer you go without using anything, the easier it gets and the easier it is to say no to it. But I mean, it's been over a decade that I've used drugs and I still think about it sometimes. And especially in those moments where I just feel anxious or tired or exhausted or just all the things, and I'm like, what I would give to just be able to escape for a little while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And then we have to remember what happens when we go there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Same. I mean, yeah. Sugar addiction, like a lot of times we'll have little slips here and there. It's a little bit different with drugs and alcohol because sugar, you know, sometimes might be in food that we don't even realize it's in there until afterwards we're like, totally. Oh, I bet that had sugar in it because we have to eat, right? So sometimes we have little slips. But it's the relapses that we're trying to prevent, just like you, because, you know, mm-hmm. a relapse could be a slip can turn into a 3-day relapse, could turn into a 3-week, 3 months, 3 years, you know, and then before you know it, you're back up to 300 pounds. So that has to be, you know, that's why abstinence is the best course of action, the best therapy for sugar addicts and people who struggle with, you know, obesity due to insulin resistance and a diet high in carbohydrates.
Yeah. For sure. I know a lot of people are totally kind of off topic, but it's really popular right now is a lot of people I know are getting on board with the GLP-1s and the peptides, mm-hmm. and they're finding some relief with that. Do you have any comments or thoughts on that?
You know, I never really had an opinion one way or another about GLP-1s because I've never been outspoken against them, even though I lost my weight just with food and intermittent fasting. But now I coach a lot of women that have type 2 diabetes and their doctors have put them on a GLP-1. So I've been doing research on them And I can see the benefit of, for certain people, I can definitely see how it would benefit to kickstart their weight loss journey, to help get their blood sugar under control. And like, I've been reading scientific studies about it, how it's like helping with the brain addiction, you know, it's quieting that brain. It's turning off that switch of the food noise. So yeah, I definitely can see the benefit of it. I can help women who are on GLP-1s because GLP-1 is just a tool. It's a tool that they can use to help them with the weight loss and the blood sugar control. But they still, most importantly, they still have to develop those lifestyle habits, the healthy lifestyle habits of eating healthy food and not eating around the clock and all the good things that come, you know, fitness and healing emotionally. And for the Christian women that I coach, you know, developing a level of spiritual maturity and an understanding of how God wants us to care for our body. So yeah, they're a tool. And I think that they are probably a pretty handy tool for some women.
Mm-hmm. For sure. And I think the main thing is having someone like you who is a coach and who can help. I mean, it's really, really hard to conquer an addiction on your own without having someone to hold you accountable or just to talk to about it. And it's not about being ashamed or, you know, like feeling guilty for doing these things, but just to have someone in your corner that can cheer you on and a community like the one you've built where women are all supporting each other. I think that's so important when you're talking about this type of journey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one more thing I would say about the GLP-1s is obviously they'd have to be working closely with a doctor with that. And I would also encourage them try it first with just real food, like real whole food, the meats and the dairy and the produce, you know, the stuff that God has made, because your body naturally has the GLP-1s. You know, in made. So I think that's what helped me. Like when I was eating very low carb, when I was eating a very strict ketogenic diet with intermittent fasting, I'm pretty sure that my GLP-1 was really activated to help me with that weight loss journey too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. So let's talk a little bit more about your book. So your book is called Sugar Freed. What do you hope women discover about themselves when they read your book?
I hope that they discover that they are more than just a physical body and that their health and wellness and a weight loss journey is way more than the scale. So what I discovered is in my 30 years of yo-yo dieting, like all the times I signed up for all the different programs and counted my points and calories, I was so focused in on the physical health, Lisa, that I totally neglected my emotional well-being. And for 30 years, I lived as a casual Christian, so my spiritual health was really apathetic. And nothing changed for me until I had that turning point on the mountain that you referenced. And I give God all the glory for that, because he definitely got my attention. And I came home from that trip and I started digging into my Bible every single day and started having a much deeper understanding that God created me, that he created us as body, mind, spirit. And when I put all those together, that's when everything changed for my health. So I have a section in the book for each aspect of our health. I have restoring the body, renewing the mind, and redeeming the spirit. And then also the first section of the book is like getting real. Like we have to resolve it. Like, why is this happening to us? And the first section is like, we have to face this, and then we can heal body, mind, and spirit.
Yeah, absolutely. What do you think some of the misconceptions are that people have before they start this journey?
That it's just another weight loss plan, right? It's just another weight loss plan. And or they have to count calories, or they have to, you know, eat less or move more, or everything in moderation. And this is like, we need to like kick all of that old dietary mantra to the curb. And begin working first for Christian women need to work most importantly on their spiritual growth and development. And then the emotional health, the emotional aspect comes into it. But, you know, and that it's not something they need to white knuckle their way through either. Like willpower and white knuckling, I did that for 30 years and it's not fun. Okay. Let me just be honest. White knuckling through a diet, feeling restriction is not fun. The way I eat is not restrictive at all. I'm never starving like I used to when I did old dietary programs. I eat from, you know, whole foods and focus on protein and healthy fats. That keeps me full, keeps me satiated. So it is not a deprivation diet. And once you figure out to put the biology, and ladies, Christian women listening, when you put the biology and biblical truth together, that's where like everything can change.
I think another misconception that people have is that they won't be satisfied or truly happy until they reach a certain weight or they look a certain way. It's kind of like when people are chasing money, you know, or objects, material things, as people think, oh, when I have the house and the family and the whatever car that I'm going to be as happy as I can be. But I think that's not true. I think once you start getting control of your life, building an identity, getting control of your eating habits, you're going to feel amazing along the way. There's not a destination in this, and there's no one certain way to look. In fact, we've all seen super confident people, and they're not the ideal way of looking that society, you know, claims to make us think that you're not going to be perfect until you look a certain way. So, I mean, I think every single body shape can be confident and take control of their health in this way.
Yeah, I like to refer to it more as gaining health. You know, if your metabolic health is damaged and you do this hard work and show up to change your health, you're gaining health. And yeah, you're right. I don't even like my coaching clients. They come to me for weight loss, but I let them in on a little secret. I'm like, I want you to gain your health. And like the scale is not going to dictate your success. Okay. So we're putting that away. This is a stewardship journey on how well can we steward our body for longevity and vitality and health and wellness. So yes, losing weight. I try not to say that a lot, but of course I'm a weight loss coach. So it does come out, but yeah, you're exactly right too.
Mm-hmm. So faith, I want to talk a little bit more about faith because it is such an important part of your story. So how did God begin changing the way you viewed yourself?
This is a great question because I have been really reflecting on this a lot in recent months, realizing that I'm a very type A person. When I set my mind to something, things typically will happen. And it happened for me as far as getting to a healthy weight. But what I see now is really important is that my identity completely shifted. Like I used to think of myself as pretty miserable and unhappy and lacking joy and just wanting to crawl into bed at the end of the evening, just going through the motions of life. And now I see myself like, even though I was a Christian at the time, I never thought that God cared about how I cared about my health. So that made me feel bad about myself too. Like this was all on me. This is my responsibility. I've dug this hole for myself. I need to get out of it by myself. But when I began reshaping my thoughts and my beliefs that I could do this, I could live as a healthy person. I am someone that loves to exercise now. I am someone that would rather walk than, you know, hop in my car to go to the post office that's four blocks away. I am someone that's going to create a healthy meal in the kitchen. I am someone that has not driven through a fast food drive-through in 10 years. You know, like you begin to see yourself as so the opposite of who I used to be. And that, I think, is really key to these transformation stories. We have to begin believing that these things are possible for us too.
So this is an interesting question and it may be hard to answer on the spot, but how do you believe that people, women how do you believe they satisfy their spiritual hunger? Because I feel like you can want spirituality and go through the motions, but still feel detached from it. Like almost like you're doing all the things, but you're not like embodying it. How did you learn to satisfy your spiritual hunger?
Actually, something my pastor used to always say before I was reading my Bible every day, I did attend church fairly regularly. I just was not a Bible reader at the time. That's why I call it casual Christianity. But he really encourages the congregation to pick up their Bible daily, read their Bible. He says it's going to be, first, it's going to seem like a discipline. And then before long, it's going to become your daily delight. And I found that to be true in my own journey. And I also see it. I see women, you know, testifying to the same thing as I guide them through this. But it really It really, like, okay, in Psalm chapter 1, there's a word, it's talking about meditating on God's word. And the word in Hebrew is Haggah. It's H-A-G-A-H. And when I discovered that word, what it means is devour. So David is writing about meditating on God's word and literally devouring it. And so I use that, and I use that a lot because, you know, everything is about food and eating and satisfying your hunger. And getting to that root of the hunger, as we're talking about today, we really can be satisfied. I know it might be hard for some people to understand that when they're not disciplined and in God's word every day. And so they develop this hunger for God's word, but it really does fully satisfy me. And I've been through seasons. I've been through really difficult seasons of suffering in the past 2 years. And there are dry spells. We all have dry spells, but I have not given up that discipline of getting in his word every day. And that is what has helped me through these long seasons of suffering and the storms of life. So for sure, I would say that my spiritual hunger is satisfied strictly by just picking up my Bible. When I dusted off my Bible after 30 years of pretty much neglecting it, then that is truly what transformed my life. The weight loss was wonderful. But it was the spiritual growth that was like, that's the real prize.
Yeah, because we're all searching for ourselves. We're all searching for comfort, but it's really within ourselves. And so when we're able to truly be independent and love from a place of just like that pure love space and not expect perfection from ourselves and not be too hard on ourselves. I mean, I've had those moments too over the past 6 months where I'm like, okay, like what's happening? I'm going through like dark night of the soul type stuff and then reverting back to believing that everything is happening for a reason as it should be. What does freedom actually look like for you now? And I'm not talking about eating perfectly or perfectionism. Right. I'm talking about actual freedom.
That I hope everybody catches that the importance of that in my book title, Sugar Freed. The freed is the emphasis. Because, for so many years, I carried that heavy weight of my circumstances on my shoulders. And that was an emotional weight. It was a physical weight of 100 extra pounds. That's not an easy thing to carry around. But, you know, I felt like I describe it as living in the sugar shackles. So that chained me down. It really, it stole my confidence. I lacked joy, like I mentioned. And I just was not living life to the fullest and on purpose. I never thought I had a purpose. So really trying my very best, like being very dedicated to improving my health, my body, mind, my spirit, my heart, my soul, all the things, like stepping out on that journey. And it's not perfect every day. Like there's no perfectionism in the sugar-free coaching community. Believe me, we try our best and we show up every day. That's what's important, because when we show up, and we do the work, we begin to feel better, and then we begin to serve better. And there's just so much freedom in that. Like, I have a completely brand new outlook on life. I'm a completely different person than I was when I started that climb on that mountain.
What surprised you most after healing your relationship with sugar and food?
Just how I gained confidence that I never had. I lacked confidence. Lisa, you never would have dragged me out of my corporate career as an accountant and a controller, because I loved that job. I really truly did love that job. But now I see that God had something bigger in mind for me, or something different in mind for me, as a writer and a speaker and a sugar addiction specialist and health and wellness coach, that it is would never have expected that in a million years. And so that's been quite eye-opening, quite life transformation. Yeah, just a big surprise.
So taking control of your health led you down a path that you never would have imagined you would have done. So it opened doors. Yes. And
right.
You changed careers, and you're an entrepreneur, and you're on a big podcast now, and you're putting yourself out there. Could you see yourself as that before? Like, was that what you were ever hoping for? Were you holding on to those thoughts, or was this completely like, did this completely catch you off guard?
This completely caught me off guard, because I was very good at hiding. I was very good at hiding out. I had my private office at work. I could shut the door, be by myself, I hid from pictures. I sat on the sidelines of life when my kids were doing physical activities. I just sat and watched them. You know, this completely caught me off guard.
Yeah. Well, that's really cool. I love that. Speaking to the person out there that might feel trapped, whether it's with sugar, food, comparison, approval, or any unhealthy pattern, what is the first step towards freedom?
The first step is getting real. We have to get real with ourselves. When I sat on the side of that mountain and I had that moment of what is happening in my life, I was only 48 years old at the time and my life was flashing before my eyes. I wanted to be around to see my grandchildren. I was heading towards type 2 diabetes as a pre-diabetic, and I looked at my feet. I had feet. I could hike up the mountain if I only took care of my body better. So I just had to get very real with myself. And sometimes we don't want to do that. Again, that goes back to the whole comfort thing, too. We don't like to be uncomfortable. And that's just, we're creatures of habit, too. But get real and then figure out why. Why there has to be dozens of reasons why you want to change your circumstance and either get healthy or overcome people pleasing or whatever it is that you feel is holding you back from living a free life. Get real and ask the why questions.
Christine, I love our conversations and you're so popular on our show. Everyone loves hearing from you. Where can everyone learn more about you and tell us more about your book?
Okay, they can find a free chapter of my book on my website if they go to christinetrimp.com. And up in the corner of the website, you could grab a free sample of the book. So you'll get that chapter is called Craving All the Wrong Things. And you can figure out why you're craving all the wrong things with that chapter. So that'll give you a good introduction to the book. And the book is also available on Amazon and wherever books are sold and on my website. And so connect with me on my website.
Amazing. And you have I'm going to say mastermind, but it's not, as a workshop coming up. And it's called The Root of Your Hunger. Tell everyone a little bit about that.
Yeah, I love to hop in the Zoom room with women and it's a workshop. So I am going to put you to work a little bit. So we'll have some handouts and some fill in the blanks and some quiet time to try to figure out things like that. Why? And let's get real. Let's get down to the root of your hunger. And yes, it is part of your hunger, could be physiological. Part of it is that sugar addiction, but what's really going on deep down. So I have this brand new workshop on July 11th, the Root of Your Hunger. It's 2 hours live on Zoom, and I would love to see you there. Grab a ticket.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there's something so powerful about that workshop itself, because there's going to be other women sitting there in that room and zero judgment and working through those things. Quite often people have those light bulb moments during those types of classes. So I'm sure you've seen it all the time. You can see it when someone has that, oh my gosh, this all makes sense now moment.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
That's why I do what I do.
Yeah, definitely. And that's like what you said earlier. That's like the first step. Is recognizing it, understanding it, and then you learn what you need to do.
Yes. Yes. And it's always nice and wonderful to have a guide. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Yeah. We all need that support system for sure.
Yes.
So thank you so much for being here. Is there any last minute things you want to leave the audience with?
No, I just dig deeper into that, the root of your hunger. And when you do that, the roots get exposed, and that is how freedom grows, I would say.
Absolutely. So thanks so much, Christine. And thank you to our audience for tuning in. This conversation is really not about sugar. It's about freedom, and freedom from all of the things, the shame, the guilt, the uncertainty, the feeling of not enoughness, freedom from looking outside yourself for something that can only be healed within. And so Christine has been so gracious in sharing her journey and her heart with us. If you would like to grab a copy of Christine's book, Sugar Freed, we've included everything in the show notes for you. And we're also going to include the link to sign up for her workshop, The Root of Your Hunger, which is taking place live on Zoom on Saturday, July 11th from 10 to 12 Eastern. And if this conversation helped you, reminded you of anything, I hope that sometimes what you're craving isn't food, sometimes it's peace. And that kind of freedom is truly available to each and every one of us. So again, if this conversation helped you, please share it with someone who you think it may help as well. And stay tuned for the next episode, everyone. Take care. Bye for now.